According to the CDC, one in every 88 children in the United States has autism. It's a disorder that impairs a variety of verbal and nonverbal communication. For some, the effects can be mild, but for others, the symptoms can be so severe that they leave individuals unable to care for themselves. In response to this growing public health issue, Missouri passed a law in 2010 requiring insurers to provide coverage of certain autism therapies. But efforts to move similar legislation forward in Kansas have recently stalled. I'm Steven Steigman, and today on Central Standard, we'll explore autism and the therapies that are showing promise, and we'll take you into the discussions in the Kansas legislature that have families on edge. That's coming up right after the news. Parents will do anything for their children. We sacrifice time and money because nothing worries us more or makes us work harder than our kids. So it probably comes as no surprise the parents of children on the autism spectrum fight for their kids too. Only they face incredible challenges in getting help for their kids. Until recently, insurance coverage for autism therapy was difficult to get. Some parents spent so much money on therapies that they fell into bankruptcy. A lot has changed in Missouri with insurance coverage for autism, but it's not so clear what will happen in Kansas. This is Central Standard. I'm Steven Steigman, and autism, therapy, and insurance coverage for those who are on the spectrum is our conversation today. Joining me in the studio are Dan Matthews and Dr. Lisa Rusinka, both from Summit Behavioral Services. Dan, Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Let's start with the very basics, the very, very basics. Dan Matthews, what is autism? The definition has changed even in the last decade or two, hasn't it?
A definition of autism.
Well,
I know it's not easy to define autism, but what's the spectrum? What are signs of autism?
Well, let me just back up. Basically, it affects socialization, communication, and behavior. And the effects can either be an excess in those areas or a deficit in those areas. So with socialization, a deficit might be just not interested in other people at all, or an over-interest that may present itself as, like, I work with children, and a child may run up to another child and put their face really close to a peer and say hi like 5 or 10 times in a row. So they want that socialization, but they don't know how to go about it correctly.
So someone with that example, that could be somebody on the autism spectrum?
Yes, it could be a clue that perhaps something's it may lead you towards thinking that maybe that child has autism.
Go ahead.
Also, in communication, some children with autism don't speak, or they may talk, overly talk about a subject and just focus on that subject and know everything about that subject but not anything else and don't want to talk about anything else. And then it also affects behavior, where some children, excuse me, in a deficit may be lack of play skills, may not know how to play with toys at all, or it may be an excess of playing with just one toy and no other toy, or some children line up things, or like they might line up their cars instead of playing on a racetrack. They may spin the wheels on the car instead of actually putting it on the racetrack. Or some children flap their hands or pace or spin things. Like they might pick up a plate and spin it on its side and just watch it spin. So that's an excess in behavior.
Well, we talk about a spectrum. This is a pretty wide spectrum, I imagine. Give us an example, Dan, of somebody at one end of the spectrum and then somebody at the extreme other end of the spectrum.
Sure. I mean, we work with children and adults who are nonverbal, who aren't social, who aren't evidently social, who engage in some self-injury, who have a lot of difficulty getting through their day. They don't have a lot of independent skills. You know, those are fairly severe cases. And then we also work with kids and adults who, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they just would have been thought as being just a little different, being a little odd. but they have odd social skills. Like Lisa said, they may not be very savvy socially with greetings or with carrying out a conversation and exchange, and taking turns in conversation and that mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Where do the majority of people lie on that spectrum?
Gosh, I mean, don't
know. Can one generalize like that?
Excuse me?
Can one make a generalization?
I don't know the answer to that. My thought would be probably more in the middle, just like anything else, like a bell curve. There'd be, you know, extreme cases where a child or an adult doesn't talk and doesn't interact with anybody. And they're at the other end would be someone like Temple Grandin who has a PhD. I think mostly you're going to fall towards the middle where you're going to have challenges, but you're not going to be that extreme.
Help me see through the eyes of somebody with autism. I mean, how do they experience the world?
That's a great question. I would say with my the children that I work with, there's a lot of frustration, confusion, but a lot of interest in wanting to learn, wanting to be with the other kids, but really just not knowing how to do it. And even the children who are not attending to their peers and not playing with toys, once we give them those skills to play with toys or play with their peers, they're right there. They're excited about right. it and they want to do it.
It used to be sort of the thinking was that they didn't have interest in mm-hmm. engaging socially, and we believe now that they have a great interest in
yes.
being social. They just
Absolutely.
Don't have the tools to do so.
Hmm. Why the change in defining it as a spectrum as opposed to distinct disabilities?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
We define autism on this broad spectrum. There's a whole bunch of different diagnoses in one condition. Mm-hmm. Why not diagnose specific ones and say this person has a problem with personal space, or this one has a problem with interacting with those who are bigger than them? I don't know.
Well, not being a diagnostician, I can't exactly speak to that, but I would say because it's not always just one thing. There's always across socialization, behavior, and communication, they are all affected in some way.
Mm-hmm. What might we have called autism 50 years ago or 40 years ago before we gave it a definition?
Mental retardation?
Maybe, yeah.
Some old archaic term like
yeah.
that.
And how about those on kind of the mild end of the spectrum? What would we have called their condition?
We might have just said that they were odd. I don't know. Because just because you have autism doesn't mean that you can't succeed in an area that interests you and you can't get married and you can't have kids. There's a lot of people who do.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Central Standard. We're talking about autism and therapy, and we're going to talk a little bit in a moment about applied behavioral analysis. Dr. Lisa Rusinko, how quickly can one diagnose autism? I mean, do you know it when you see it?
I will definitely have my suspicions. Again, I'm not a diagnostician.
But surely, you working with kids, you must know the difference between, somebody.
Sometimes it's very obvious. Mm-hmm. I mean, other times there may be a question you have to do some assessments. Well, you should always do assessments, but you may need to do further assessments to really make sure that this is autism.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into this?
Wow. back in about 20 years ago, I actually saw an advertisement in the newspaper to work with a child in their home and to be trained under the LOVAS tradition, which is
way.
It's a very specific way of doing discrete trial, which is a method to teach children with autism.
Hmm.
It's one of the methods. And so I was trained in that method and saw great results. I started with a child who was 2.5, and when I went in that home, all the child did was scream and cry and cling to his mother. And within a year and a half, the child was talking, was potty trained, was starting to read.
Hmm.
So that really made me go, wow, ABA is great.
Huh. Well, the CDC reported that autism disorders increased from 1 in 110 children in 2006 to 1 in 88 from the latest data. Why have we seen such an increase of people who are on the spectrum? Is it a case of autism not being diagnosed in earlier years and now we're catching it early on? Or do you think there's an increase in the cases of autism?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there's so much more awareness now than there was even 10 or 15 years ago that at the general practitioner level, you know, your neighborhood doctor knows a lot more about autism than they did in the 80s and 90s. But I also – I mean, I think there's some evidence that suggests that there isn't an increase in people with autism. And I'll leave it at that because I don't – that's not my area. But I think it's a combination of both.
Lisa, I know there are various theories out there on why there might be an increase in cases of autism. Do you want to share some of those with us or any of your personal feelings on why there's been an increase in cases?
Really, I would say – part of the reason there's been increase is just because of awareness. The children that would have kind of fallen through the cracks are now being caught, basically.
Right.
'Cause those children would have kind of made it through, kind of muddled through school and gone in on into college, but they would still have their challenges. But now, because there's more awareness, we can actually help those students be more successful. Other than that, they're looking into it. There's research trying to figure out, you know, is there something environmental going on?
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's not our area of expertise, so I don't really know.
Okay. How early can parents detect that a child is on the spectrum? I mean, are we doing a better job of diagnosing early on?
I think with the increase of awareness, absolutely. Parents are noticing, wait, this is not right. I need to go ask my doctor.
Like at 18 months mm-hmm. rather than some of the kids that we saw 10 years ago at 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. years old. I think they're catching them a lot earlier when they see those early signs of social delay.
And if they're not catching it, who is catching it?
Pediatricians.
Pediatricians, mm-hmm. anyone else and that they're going to
write
to?
Child, mm-hmm. Yeah, like preschool mm-hmm. teachers. Okay. And, yeah.
Well, I mean, is American society sensitive to those who are on the spectrum? I mean, how much of the battle for those with autism is about public education?
A ton of it. I think people in general are a lot more aware and tolerant and accepting of people with disabilities. But I think the education that we've gotten in the area of autism, just in general, you know, there are TV shows, there are newspaper articles, there are great radio shows. And, you know, I think those are the things that make people more accepting of people who are different than they are.
I mean, because the definition of autism has changed over the last decade or so, is it harder to get the public and therefore insurance companies to follow this moving target? Sorry for the lack of a better term there. Does the American public have a complete understanding or enough of an understanding of autism to make the case for advocacy for autism?
The American, like, in,
I so, mean, you know, how about, I mean, insurance, we'll get to this in our second half of our show. We'll talk about insurance, but I guess in your opinion, do you think most Americans are aware of autism or aware enough of this autism?
I think there's always room for improvement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People, I think, are more aware of the term, but they really don't understand what it is, and they do not understand that a child with autism has a world of potential just like any other child.
Hmm. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Stephen Steigman. Our guests are Dan Matthews and Dr. Lisa Rusinka, both from Summit Behavioral Services. We're discussing autism therapies, their methods, effectiveness, and cost. Have you or somebody in your family live with autism and tried those therapies, and including applied behavior analysis? What's been your experience? Did it work for you or your loved one? Join our conversation today by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. How long did it take schools to get schools to recognize autism and autism therapy?
We contract with several school districts in the area, and I've been in Kansas City working for about 15 years, and I can say, 10 or 12 or 15 years ago, people didn't know, school districts didn't know a lot about autism, and the term ABA, they had no idea what that was. Applied behavior analysis was not well recognized in schools. I think that has changed so quickly and so much for the better in the last 4, 5, 6 years. I think there's a lot of awareness of a lot of awareness in schools, and I think there's a lot better collaboration between school districts and parents. And I'm sure there will be a few callers that disagree, mm-hmm. but I'm amazed in 15 years how that's changed.
You mentioned ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis. What is it, and how is it different approach to other types of therapy?
Well, ABA is a systematic way of looking at the environment to see what's affecting behavior. And we look at what occurs before behavior and what occurs after behavior to see whether it's increasing or decreasing a behavior. Let me just give you an example. So say I have a child who every time we say it's time to go to the bathroom, they scream and cry. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to look and see what's happening just before and what's happening just after that's causing that behavior to occur. I may find that the child's, playing with a toy, and every time it's time to go to the bathroom, they start screaming. Well, then what I may do is manipulate the environment to have whoever is talking to the child, the adult, is a parent or a teacher, I'll have them give the child a warning. So I might say, in 1 minute, we're going to go to the bathroom. And then, okay, in 30 seconds, we're going to go to the bathroom. Okay, it's time to go to the bathroom. So give that child a chance to adjust to the fact that they need to get up and go to the bathroom. Also, I'll look at what's happening after. If a child screams and cries and the adult says, okay, you don't have to go, inadvertently, that adult has taught that child to scream to get out of going. Hmm. So that from the child's perspective, all they have to do is scream and then they don't have to go.
Right.
So what I would do then is teach the adult to follow through. And follow through just means it's time to go to the bathroom, so we need to go. So we wouldn't allow the child to get out of going to the bathroom, but we'd also, in conjunction with that, provide reinforcement for going. So praising compliance, offering, a toy or something for doing what they're supposed to do, or maybe something like an edible, which might be a cracker, mm-hmm. or a gummy bear or something, mm-hmm. to reinforce the behavior that we want. So basically, just to recap, it's looking at what happens before and what happens after and manipulating those things. I may just manipulate something before and it'll be work, or maybe change something that's happening following the behavior and it work, or might change both things. And it's all about changing the environment to either support the behavior that we want or decrease the behavior that isn't wanted.
Dan, you've been doing this for quite a while now. How does ABA differ from other types of therapies?
Right. What I really like about ABA is that, like Lisa has said, it relies on our ability to manage the environment and change. We don't change behavior from the person out. We change behavior from the environment in. Mm-hmm. So it's based on, it doesn't discount, we can't change this child's behavior because the child has such a terrible disability. It always relies on the fact that if we can become better teachers and we can become better managers of our environment, that change is always possible.
Who developed ABA?
Skinner.
B.F. Skinner. B.F. Skinner.
Okay. So it's an kind of an old treatment being used on a relatively recent spectrum of diagnosis.
Well, about 50 years of research supporting the effectiveness of ABA therapy to treat autism.
Well, does ABA work for everybody, or does effectiveness differ depending on where you fall on the spectrum?
It would absolutely work for everyone.
Hmm. And I guess the all-important question here, what does ABA cost?
ABA costs a lot.
Yeah.
It is different than other therapies in that you don't come receive treatment once a week for 2 hours and off you go, about your week. Modifying the environment and addressing these global deficits takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And it's not – if there was a better way to do it, if I could write a prescription and send it home with you and you could have it filled and be fixed in a couple of hours, it would be much cheaper, I think. Mm-hmm. It relies on a lot of face time with therapists. And so, of course, the costs reflect that.
And how do you know when it's working?
That's a good question. We collect a tremendous amount of data, and we make decisions about our treatment based on the data that we collect. We don't just kind of ask, do you feel like things are better? Or do you feel like you're improving? We really rely on observing the behavior that we're interested in and then measuring that over time.
Lisa writes this email to centralstandard@kcur.org. We are parents of a three-year-old with autism who has been receiving 35 hours a week of ABA therapy for over a year. She was nonverbal and severely delayed. Speech is very difficult for her. She has to fight. She has had to fight for every syllable, every sound. But through constant trial training and reinforcement, her ABA therapy team has helped her chain sounds together into words. We are so fortunate to have the insurance coverage through a self-funded plan. We would be lost without it. ABA treatment, expensive, as you mentioned. Does insurance cover ABA in Missouri? Let's talk about Missouri for a moment here, Dan.
Missouri passed legislation, and I'm terrible with dates. It was sometime in the summer of 2010, mm-hmm. I believe. And, you know, there was a little bit of uptake time. It took several months for providers, the insurance companies themselves, and parents to all really understand the dynamics of insurance billing. I mean, I've been working for 15 years. I'd never even interacted with insurance companies until a few years ago. But I guess in my opinion, in my bubble of what I see, insurance has been an absolute change in services in Missouri, unlike anything I've ever seen. We're now serving clients who 5 years ago didn't qualify to get assistance with services because they either didn't qualify through the Department of Mental Health or they couldn't afford to pay privately, and so they were left to their own resources.
Let's take a call now at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Let's say hi to Robert in Liberty. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm actually a service coordinator with the Center for Human Services. I provide funding for these services a lot of times to individuals with autism, and I'll be presenting March 8th at the Missouri Conference of the American Counseling Association about therapies for autistic kiddos. I wanted to say I agree with Lisa entirely that ABA will work across the board for just about anyone. That is shaping behavior. You can do it at any level. But I believe that for high-functioning individuals and for individuals who are over the age of 16, so they have a little more cognitive ability, that there are other therapies that work maybe a little better, especially at shaping things like, you know, the emotional recognition and some of the obsessive-compulsive behaviors that come along with high-functioning autism and Asperger's, although since the DSM-5, Asperger's is really not a diagnosis anymore. So,
Lisa Rosenko, your response to Robert?
Well, shaping is an ABA term, and I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but you can use ABA principles with anybody across really any situation and change behavior.
I think, Robert, maybe some practitioners, and I'll include myself in that, maybe we're not as well versed at training social skills at that level. You know, I mean, I've spent a lot of time.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I've seen ABA work absolute miracles as a service provider in kiddos and low-functioning and moderately functioning autistic individuals. It's just I would argue that things like cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectical behavioral therapy approach more the kind of emotional recognition and emotional regulation issues and social functioning issues than the ABA would.
Sure. But there is a group, KCART, Kansas Center for Autism Research and Training, over in the Edwards campus, and they have a social skills group for young adults, and they use ABA therapy to teach these individuals social skills. So you can be effective with ABA therapy at that age and with those skills.
Robert,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Autism Works does the same. They teach it from an ABA perspective. I just personally have seen, like through the Lilac Center in Kansas City and some other places, that DBT, Tri-County Mental Health, is now opening a DBT clinic that's been up for a while, and I've seen pretty amazing progress with those. So my argument would be to increase across the board the parity to apply to other therapies as well.
Yes, I agree with you on that. I think that's fantastic that there are other therapies that are showing great effects. And I think a collaboration across therapies would be fantastic.
Well, that brings up – Robert, thank you very much for your call. That brings up an interesting question, which is if there's competition for different types of therapies, is competition in the best interest of those who have autism? Meaning if you're trying to convince an insurance company to cover ABA at the expense of – I can't remember the name of the other type of insurance, whatever that Robert just brought up. Are you pulling from the same pot of money here?
I don't know. I think competition is good. I think the most important thing is that it's research-based, that it's got empirical evidence to support it. I know, you know, over the years we've had many, many types of intervention used with people with autism, and some is very well researched and some is not so much. And, you know, if we're going to be responsible for spending that kind of money, which is a lot,
mm-hmm.
I think we owe it to the field, to those with disabilities, that we use evidence-based practices.
We've talked a little bit about therapy being an intensive multiple hours per week, 30-something hours per week. How much therapy is needed for those with autism? I mean, how long does therapy go on? Is ABA the type of therapy where you do for a year and then you're done?
Early intervention, which is, you know, ages 2.5 or even young as 2 up to 5 or 6, really recommends 20 to 40 hours a week. But it really depends on the functioning level of the child, what is really needed.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're going to need to continue therapy on into early adulthood, it really is dependent on the child and the child's needs.
Right. Give us an example of somebody who's been using ABA and continues to use ABA, you know, on an ongoing basis. You have any stories to share with us?
I personally deal in a lot more crisis behavior intervention. Lisa and the folks in her clinic, of course, they're working with younger kids, and so they're doing a lot of more skill acquisition. But I have over the years worked with kids very intensively initially. On severe behaviors and, aggression and self-injury and things. And as those behaviors improve, there are always things to work toward. There are always, now we're not engaging in self-injury, but now there are still big problems when we're told no or when we can't get what we want. And so, we're safe, but now we have to work more on, there are always things to improve upon, and I'd like to think that over the years that the problems are become more and more sophisticated and closer to the social norms that everyone else has.
Dan Matthews, Dr. Lisa Rusinko from Summit Behavioral Services, thank you both very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk with two parents who have children with autism. And we'll talk a little bit about insurance and why insurance doesn't always cover therapy. I'm Stephen Steigman. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Stephen Steigman. We're talking about autism treatment and the cost associated with treatment. Probably comes as no surprise that, like many treatments, insurance doesn't always cover the costs. Joining us now, Mike Wasmer is a parent of a child with autism and the Associate Director of State Government Affairs for Autism Speaks. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Jennifer Smith is the parent of two children with autism and the Executive Director of the Heartland Chapter of the Autism Society of America. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Jennifer, when did you learn that your children were on the spectrum?
Well, my daughter...
That's an easy question to open up with, I know.
Well, when did I know?
Oh, right.
Well, I didn't know. My mother was the one that said, you know, your daughter's, you know, Corinne's having a few delays. She's not like you were whenever you were her age. And those were starting to be identified at 2 years old, 18 months to, you know, to 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
My son and daughter are 17 months apart. So my daughter would look at you, and I called it the deer in the headlight look whenever you're trying to talk to her, and she would kind of cock her head and like she was trying to catch one or two words of what you were saying. And then my son was completely nonverbal whenever we started. They actually had what I called this dolphin call. They would communicate through high-pitched sounds to each other. And that was like a real red flag. But my pediatrician, of course, that was my daughter's almost 20-something years ago. My pediatrician was like, oh, they'll come around. They'll come around. And I think a lot of us have heard that, you know, with our older children now. And so actually I read an article in the Kansas City Star about Asperger's. And then that's whenever really started to dig deeper. The children were actually going to early childhood programs at our school. And but at that time, the schools wouldn't say, I think your child has autism. I think your child has this. They were just working on a developmental delay.
So your daughter's 21. Your son is 19. Now, if they were 4 and 5 or, you know, now, what would their lives be different? Meaning, would they have received intervention earlier? Would your life be different? Tell us about that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when my children were diagnosed, they were it was actually 6 and 5. Corinne was 6, Cameron was 5, and we were on a year waiting list. And Corinne was diagnosed in June, Cameron was diagnosed in July. Actually, ABA was not even talked about. Mm-hmm. It was like, here you go, work with the school, and there you go.
Well, what did the school provide back then?
Speech. We actually just myself, I started researching, you know, and looking at what I needed to do and actually evaluated what my children's strengths were. And of course, two different forms of autism. And what I know now, oh, it would be completely different, completely different. And that's why when I get these phone calls from these families that their child's, you know, 18 months, 16 months, and they've already started some programs, it's like, oh, this is so fantastic. You're doing
here.
A great job.
Yeah.
And schools are already involved. It's and the parents are identifying it and they're able to – it's an opportunity that is so fantastic that it opens up a lot of doors of where they could go, this individual could go.
Mike, tell me your story.
excuse me. I have a daughter with autism. She's now 14. She was actually developing – you know, for all intents and purposes, normally up until a year of age, she had speech. She was interactive with us. But we started noticing shortly after her first birthday that she wasn't talking as frequently. And it was a gradual process. But by the time she was ultimately diagnosed with autism at 2.5, she was nonverbal, did not interact with us at all socially, and was essentially, you know, content to sit in the corner and do her repetitive behaviors. Similar to Jen, we you know, had expressed concerns over that period of time to our pediatrician that something was going on, and we got a similar response, and that was, well, you know, she's flapping her hands like this because she's a late talker, and it's just her way of expressing frustration. And ultimately, we were fortunate that she had an ear infection, and my wife took her into her to see the pediatrician. A regular pediatrician wasn't there, and we saw a different pediatrician in the office. And within minutes of just observing her in the room, she expressed concerns to my wife that there were some developmental delays and referred us for an evaluation.
Are you still with that same pediatric group?
We are.
Okay.
Actually,
so. There's an advantage of a pediatric group, I guess, with multiple doctors in it. Well, as you navigated through this process of learning about autism, your children's diagnosis and treatment, how prominent was the thought, how am I going to pay for this? Jennifer, let's start with you.
Well, actually being a single parent and been divorced for 13 years, a lot of it was on my own. I had full insurance coverage for myself and for my children, but it just – I robbed Peter to pay Paul, maxed out credit cards. I actually – and it's a very hard moment, but I actually had to file bankruptcy. You don't want to do that. I did absolutely everything I possibly could to take care of my family, and I had to come to a realization that I can't go on. I mean, I maxed out every opportunity. And it's tough. And I swear if I ever win the lottery, I'll pay back that money. But I just it's tough. And families do that. And that's why, I mean, having this full coverage and having this opportunity to be able to give our children the chance when it's prescribed by a doctor for these services. And it's just as the folks before us, it's evidence-based, it's proven, it works.
Well, how frustrating was it when you found out that insurance would not cover the therapy that was needed? I mean, to what extent did you call insurance companies and say, you should be covering this? Or did you just say, they don't cover it and I guess I'm going to have to do this on my own?
Yes. I mean, a lot of times, where parents now talk to insurance companies, they have a spine. They can go after them. Whereas before, we're like, oh, okay, I'll obey the rules. I'll follow that because you know best. And then now it's like, no. And the parents are on top of it. They're advocating. They're getting groups involved. And going to our legislators and saying, this is not right. We're paying for this. Why isn't this happening? Before, you know, and that was the other thing. It's not only just paying for the autism therapy. It was people were being denied services because they had ear infections or their child needed braces for the legs. Had nothing to do with the autism diagnosis. It was other situations. So they were being denied services just because they had autism and it was something else too. So that was extremely frustrating.
Mike, when you started therapy for your daughter, was insurance coverage available at all for autism therapies?
No. I mean, I had insurance. You know, we've been paying premiums for years, and it never occurred to me when she was diagnosed with autism that her what she was prescribed by her doctor wouldn't be covered. You know, as Jen mentioned, you know, all of our services were denied, denial for ABA, denial for the speech therapy, denial for occupational therapy. And we did actually appeal. But when we got the denial letters, you know, I appealed again. And at that point, you know, we're just getting the services started. We had the ability to pay for it out of pocket, although it was hurting. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want her services to be delayed any further. So we were paying for it out of pocket. My wife was pregnant. We just had an infant. So it was a very difficult time for my family. And, you know, I didn't have the energy to fight the insurance companies at that point any further. So, you know, we drained our savings account to provide her the therapy that she was prescribed. But like I said, she's now 14, and she's been, because of the therapy that she was prescribed and received, she has been mainstreamed in regular education since first grade without an aide. Now she's a freshman in high school. She's in all honors classes making straight A's. You know, she's on teams and has been in a school play and plays the violin. She still has autism. She still struggles with some social deficits, but she's going to be a productive, tax-paying, independent citizen, whereas if she hadn't been able to get the services, you know, she wouldn't.
Well, I'm guessing you're proud of her, and even more so, you should be proud of yourself for intervening early on, it sounds like.
Oh, we're obviously incredibly proud of her. She's worked harder than anyone I've ever met in my life. You know, she essentially had a 30-hour work week for 3 years from the time she was three. But it's very difficult to see, and that's kind of why I became involved in advocacy. You know, autism affects people of all means. And just because we were blessed to be able to provide for her services out of pocket, you know, it shouldn't be that way. People who are paying their premiums for their health insurance, you know, that's what health insurance is all about, to take care of people when, you know, a disaster strikes like that.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Stephen Steigman. Our guests are Mike Wassmer. He is Associate Director of State Government Affairs for Autism Speaks, and Jennifer Smith, the Executive Director of the Heartland Chapter of the Autism Society of America. They both have children who have been diagnosed on the spectrum, and we're discussing their experiences with this and the pending legislation in Kansas that could have a big impact on many families who are dealing with autism. Do you think states should mandate coverage for certain autism coverage, or is this something that should be left in the hands of insurers? Join our conversation. Call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. So, Mike Wassmer, tell us about the law that the Missouri General Assembly passed in 2010. What does it cover?
The Missouri legislature passed a law in 2010 that required coverage for the diagnosis and treatment of autism, including applied behavior analysis. Now, when the law passed, they had an annual dollar cap on ABA of $40,000. With implementation of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, and they've since removed that dollar cap. So essentially, they have an uncapped benefit in Missouri now. And it's been life-changing for children with autism in Missouri.
I imagine. So how hard was it – how difficult was it to get the General Assembly to go that way?
At that time, the law was passed. I was not working for Autism Speaks. I'm actually a veterinarian by trade and since hung up my stethoscope several years ago. But at that time, I wasn't working directly in Missouri. But I do know that, you know, they were working on that for several years. It didn't just happen that first year.
Any idea what finally convinced lawmakers on the Missouri side? Was it advocacy by parents, by organizations? What broke the camel's back in Missouri, in a legislature which I imagine is not wouldn't necessarily be friendly to such an interest?
It was some hardcore parents and educating. I mean, they were knocking on doors. They were emailing. They were phone calling. They were down there visiting. They were bringing their children. It was an education. It was a pure education of saying, you've got to stop and listen of what's going on in our state. Because if we do not work on this now, at the early end of it, you're going to be dealing with it at the end. And also, they had a governor. Governor Nixon was all over it. He was understanding. He was a part of it. I mean, he met so many families. Sorry, I'm getting emotional. I was there whenever he was holding this one little boy's hand, and I'm not going to mention his name, but it was so fantastic to see, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of you. And he was so interested in our families on the Missouri side. That's what we have to have. We have to have the legislators and the governor all involved with this process to know we take care of our citizens at the beginning. It's going to be such a wonderful thing at the end because, like Mike said with his daughter, my daughter is 20, almost 21. She's going to college. She's going to be an entrepreneur. She's going to be a taxpaying citizen. That's what we want for our children.
So what's happening, rather, what's not happening in Kansas?
Well, we did get a bill passed the same year that Missouri did, but we had been working on that for 3 years as well. But the bill that passed was very limited. It only applied to our state employee health program. And the state of Kansas has a statute that requires that any mandated benefit first undergo go through this pilot project to determine cost and utilization before they consider extending it to outside the state employee plan. So the bill passed. The benefits were being provided for calendar year 2011. The Kansas State Employees Health Care Commission reported back the cost at that time after the first year, 14 cents per member per month. So very affordable, obviously. We've been working since then trying to get that benefit extended to state employees, and that's where we remain.
So it's 2014, 3 years after it was implemented. What's the holdup? Did the 3-year trial period not convince lawmakers that they should extend it to all Kansans?
I guess the short answer is I don't know. I think there is a lot of pressure against doing this from the insurance lobby, which is one of the most wealthy lobbyists and lobbying groups in the country. So, you know, we're up against Goliath, really, and they put a tremendous amount of pressure on our legislators.
816-235-2888, 816-235-2888, if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's say hi to John in Stillwell. John, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'd like to add a few comments from different points of view, or maybe a different point of view. I'm a retired insurance company CEO and have been involved in health insurance for much of my career. Two things. One, or some of things. In Missouri, I believe one reason that got through the legislature is that one of the legislators, perhaps a pretty powerful one, had a grandson who had autism. And so he took up the cause, and it always helps, of course, to have somebody who has a personal interest in the legislature pushing things. Secondly, you said several times on the show that the insurers make the decisions, and so actually that's not quite true. Most insurance in the U.S. is through employers, and employers determine which benefits to cover. And the insurance companies provide the pricing for it, and the administration. So, to a large degree, if you don't have coverage for autism or for mental health, for example, that is because the employer has decided not to offer that.
Mike Westman, what do you say to our caller, John?
I guess I would just like to clarify a little bit. There are several different kinds of insurance, and it's divided by how those policies are regulated. Type of plans that the caller is referring to, where the employer can decide which benefits are included, are self-funded health benefit plans. I believe you got an email from someone during the first segment of the program that described how happy they were with their benefit because they had ABA covered through a self-funded health benefit plan. And those are typically provided through large companies that have greater than 200 employees, and that is actually federally regulated, not state regulated. So we could pass a law, a state law, that wouldn't apply to that type of plan. It is true that for self-funded health benefit plans, if the employer decides that, hey, this is a benefit that my employees have requested, I see the value of this, they can request of their third-party administrator to add that benefit. That's not the case for fully insured plans. So, when I was a practicing veterinarian and worked at a practice that had about 150 employees, we had a fully insured health benefit plan. So basically my employer shopped around and found a fully insured health benefit plan that he purchased for his employees. When my daughter was diagnosed with autism and things were being denied, I talked with him about that. He had no say over those benefits because it was a different type of plan. It was not a self-funded health benefit plan. So just to clarify, that's not always the case.
So, John, clarification for me, we have these different types of plans. What does the Affordable Care Act say anything about autism and types of insurance?
I don't know. I'm afraid I don't know the answer on that particular question. And by the way, I have a grandson who is autistic, so I'm very supportive of the issue here that we're discussing. I do believe there are prior fully insured plans that offer the benefit, but they are more rare. They're not offered in every state. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's no competition in some states, as we know. Mm-hmm. But insurance companies, by and large, will offer benefits that they can get paid for. It's actually the insurance company's benefit to offer more benefits. It's their profitability if they can offer and be paid competitively for more benefits because their profit is a percent of premium. Mm-hmm. The more benefits they offer, the more premium they collect, the more profit they get. So the insurance companies are worried about competitive pricing issues more than they are about denying a benefit, to be candid.
John, thank you so much for the call today. I appreciate you calling in. Where are we in trying to get more coverage in Kansas? What am I going to see by the end of 2014 or 2015?
Well, I hope that by the end of this session we'll have passed a bill that extends the coverage outside of the state employees health plan. But again, that will only affect fully insured plans. A state law can't affect those self-funded plans, and in Kansas that probably accounts for 30% or more of the policies.
Hmm. And actually, before we get time gets away from us, let's say hi to Mark in Kansas City. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much. I just wanted to put a word in about county programs, public programs. I have a daughter, 17 years old, with autism. She operates at about a sixth grade level. What we used was Johnson County Parks and Recs, their gymnastics program, any kind of swimming program they use. We were involved with our Shawnee Mission pre-K program. Any kind of funding for programs that special needs kids can get involved with is some of the best therapy that you can have. And unfortunately, our state, Kansas, chooses not to fund special ed teachers at the programs at the level that they used to. I'll take comments off the air.
Mm, thanks for your call. Any comment to what he had to say?
Well, he's right. He's right. There are so many programs out there that our counties and our schools are trying to create. I mean, families are trying to create. I mean, we've got families that are creating social skills, but also being led by specialists and trying to. And we're trying to get scholarships. We do fundraisers to help pay for these so the family can and have this. And it's a part where to give our children an opportunity because they can do these things just to their ability.
Very quickly, when do you know that you have succeeded? Personally and professionally here.
Every day. Every day, whenever you can work on my son washing his pizza pan, my daughter going to college, openly starting a conversation, you know when you've hit those, whenever you can see it every day, and you don't take anything for granted.
Jennifer Smith is the executive director of the Heartland chapter of the Autism Society of America. Jennifer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mike Wassmer is associate director of state government affairs for Autism Speaks. Thank you for joining us today, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore how technology is changing teaching, and we'll get an update on what you think the dividing and uniting lines are in our region. Stay with us for up-to-date conversation with KCK, Wyandotte County Mayor and CEO Mark Holland. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Christy Garten. I'm Steven Steigman, and this is Central Standard on KCUR.